views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of gold.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Dave from LA, coming to you live from FEMA region number 6 on today's date is October the 19th, 2017. We have a live show for you today. Just want to thank you all for listening and being a part of our broadcast today. And just want to say, once again, you mean so much to us. So with that being said, we want to jump into some of the administrative things and we'll get into today's show. And that would be, everyone can please continue to support Black Talk Radio Network. Go to the website for Black Talk Radio Network, www.blacktalkradionetwork.com. And then once you go there, you will see the donation prompt on the homepage. Please give some of your financial energy to sponsor and to support this network, because it's only you are the reason why this network is going to be able to do anything going forward in the future. It is so desperately needed. Please give some of your financial energy. It's financial energy that this network needs to continue to go and grow. Also, you can support the network by being a part of its social media outlet known as BTR Community. BTR Community was created with you in mind to be able to have a social media platform where you won't be as adversely affected as you would on the mainstream ones. Most people think that the overall Fed book is free, but it's not. There's a lot that goes along with it, and it siphons a lot from you. Data mining, and actually many of us have lost positions, promotions, employment, and opportunities because they go to your Facebook page. And not only that, it also will sell your identity. Many of the mainstream social media sell your identity. It's why you get so many calls from so many telemarketers and everything else. And that's where, you know, part of somewhere it comes from. So definitely Black Talk Radio Network or BTR Community will never, ever, ever sell your information to any third party that you would not otherwise want to have your information. So it doesn't do that. So support BTR Community by becoming a member. It's only $24 a year, and with that membership you can promote things. You can actually promote things about your business, promote things about you, events that you think are relevant. You can post things that you think need to be put before the people, and you can engage in all of your social media activities that you would at the other places without being as adversely affected. So definitely come on over to BTR Community. It's the only place that I post stuff. Okay, so also if you would like to acquire real money, you could go to prosperitymint.com and check out what's in inventory there. And then email info@prosperitymint.com. Man, let me tell y'all something. Rhodium was going crazy the past couple of days. For some of you that have engaged in the precious metals class and engaged in acquiring rhodium, you know exactly from that class, this is what we said is going to be happening, and it's a telltale sign of some very, very critical things that's going to be going on, and you will be better positioned for it. And so let me just tell you this. You know, some of us may think we know a lot about the precious metals. I don't claim to know everything, but what I do know is this. This is what I do know. If you do not know how to acquire the precious metals at the same cost per average as the bankers do, you're getting ripped off. And I'm not saying you're getting ripped off because the precious metals aren't valuable. It's that you are actually, because you don't know what that really entails. You think you do and you don't. One of the things that we show you in our precious metals class is we show you how to acquire the precious metals properly. And just by the price of it is not properly. What we do is we show you and engage in acquiring the precious metals at the same rate that the bankers do. And otherwise, and if you do it any other way, the bankers are really getting you. You just don't know it. And I know people that have never taken a class, they would say, huh? But well, as you take the class, people are like, wow, yo, this is nuts. It makes all the sense in the world, though. So definitely engage with us. If you'd like to take the precious metals class, definitely you can email, text me, 951-790-8330. Very, very, very important. So let me look at real quickly before we get into today's show. My mouse don't want to work. My mouse has been caught by the cat. Okay, hold on. Want to get into some of the things that was going on. All right, hopefully that will help. Let me just fix my mouse really quickly. You know, so it's a lot of, you know, when we talk about like the precious metals and things of that nature, there's a rhyme and a reason that goes along with different things. And if you don't know the rhymes or the reasons, or you don't know how things are actually what's being done, you can be victimized by it. And I'm going to tell you, definitely are. Okay, so rhodium came down a little bit, but it's still, woof. Yeah, it's definitely a signal that's going there. So definitely, if you'd like to engage in the precious metals, definitely get in contact with Prosperity Mint. And if you'd like to take the precious metals class, you can contact me. Very, very important. My man, Roz, no, not yet. Give it about an hour or so, Roz. You know what I'm talking about. Okay? All right. So let's... What else I got? Okay. Also, if you'd like to engage in the cryptocurrencies by trading, you can do that with us through Trade Coin Club by way of rcryptocurrency.com. Also, for those of you that are in BTR community, just go to the thread for Tando Radio Show, and below the postings for today's show, you can see the actual posting that I put in for the crowdsourcing crowdfunding campaign that's going on. You can use that link there to get into it and engage in it. And if you need more or further information, without a doubt, definitely email or text me, and text me at 951-790-8330, or you could actually email me at at wolf6pack1@gmail.com. okay? So it's I posted it. It's about 10 hours ago I posted it, and it's the link for the crowdfunding, and it's really, really significant. I'll say this way. Very few platforms where you can get and acquire the cryptocurrencies, particularly Bitcoin, below market price, but have it at full market value is the best way to put it. You are able to acquire Bitcoin below market price, but at full market value. And that is phenomenal. So definitely engage in that. And if you need more information, definitely text me, 951-790-8330. My phone goes off because of this crowdfunding campaign is going on. People all over the world want to get into this. And so just be patient with us, and we will definitely get to you, definitely. Okay? So that is that. My throat is going. All right, so let me get into some of the things of what's in the news. There's a lot of good stuff that's what's in the news. My man Rise posted a lot of good stuff, but won't be able to go through it all. We're going to jump and get into some of it, jumping into the show, today's show. Now that you're ready, your first response to future events will be powerful. And I said that now that you're ready. I'm specifically talking about those of you that are preparing for what's happening, and preparing and putting yourself and your family in a position of advantage. That's a very, very powerful move. And as things start to unfold in the future, you're going to have some leverage like never, ever before. Now, I'm going to tell you one of the things the reason why I did get into the cryptocurrencies, because it's a currency. I realize that it's not money. But what I'm using it for is that currency right now is the choice of movement, and then you can get it and then transfer it. It's just like you transfer it into real money. It's just like with anything else. All currency you get, it's having currency gives you leverage. Take that leverage and then move it into a position of control. Move it into a position of control. So that's why I'm engaging it, and I'm going to tell you, there's some other great opportunities that we're going to have some guests on. Probably have the first ICO that we'll have on the network. I mean, on the not the network, because I'm pretty sure it is the network, but for sure, Tando Radio Show. I don't want to speak for the whole network. It's a big network. We're going to have a guest that is a principal member of an ICO that's going to be coming out, and they said, "Hey, Dave, I see what you're doing, and I want to help our people, and so I want to give some good opportunities." And it's an ICO that's going to be principal in an ICO that's going to be coming in presenting the ICO to you all, and phenomenal. So for those of you that are in the cryptocurrency space, you know the power and the leverage by that, so there's going to be some good things. So have the individual on. Can't wait for that to happen. It's going to happen relatively soon. So making some moves for you all accordingly. So that's today's show. Now that you're ready, your first response to future events will be powerful. And I'm going to go over some of that before we get into today's video. Lion's share of the show will be a video, because I'll be traveling. And I just really want you to hear some things. All right, so let's jump into the news. But at any time, if you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. My man Scotty said, "Dave, I don't see a video among the 40 plus posts in the thread." Yeah, I'm going to, let me see if I can put it in here, Scotty. Maybe I'll be tech savvy enough to savvy enough to do that. Is there? Let me grab it really quickly. A little technical things before between me and Scotty that have to be done. So where is it? I'm almost there. Okay. Let me find it, and then we're going to get right into what's in the news. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm old. I don't get to do two things. I can't always do two things at one time. Wow. It's a lot. Yep. Okay. So where is it? It's buried somewhere in here. Let me pull it up. Oh, I know what to do. I got you, Scotty. I'll just go straight to YouTube, grab it off of there, and then send it to my man. So I'll have it posted inside of this chat that's right here, Scotty, and I'll give you some time to load it and everything else. So there's a lot of good stuff. Hold on, and we'll get into what's in the news. Can't do two things at one time because I can't see the board that way. So while we're doing that, before we get in the news, let me just talk about, the importance of the moves that you all, some of you all are making. You know who directly I'm talking to, the individuals that have actually seen that, hey, there's a response that we need to take to different things. Let me tell you, that position is so, so strong, and it's really, really going to magnify itself even before the so-called some major, major crisis, in my opinion. I think it will make itself apparent to you relatively soon, but even when the crises do start to unfold, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have so many options. And because of that, you will be able to position yourself to create your sovereignty. One of the things that happens in an economy, those that have assets and those that prepare for what's coming are ahead of the curve. And by them being ahead of the curve, the overall curve does not take them off course. It actually is like a jet stream, and it bumps them further along. Now, why isn't this pulling up? Of course, because we're on the radio, and whenever I'm on the radio, everything starts to go kaput on me. So
I think my
mouse is messing up. What's that, Scotty?
Is it a PBS video?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay, I found it.
Okay. Thank you, brother. But in the meantime, I just messed up. Uh-oh. That's why it wasn't working. Inadvertently made a mistake and unplugged my mouse. Now I got it. Find that and get it back plugged in. Uh-oh. Boy, I always do something. I hope I didn't lose the feed and everything else. No, I didn't. I don't think I did. Nope, I didn't. Okay, cool. So, yeah, Scotty, it's the genocide one. That's the one we wanted to. Thank you, brother. Okay, so since Scotty has that, let me just say this. It's very, 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 very important in the leverage that you will be having. And when things start to deteriorate, what's going to happen is that you're going to be able to respond to different things and actually momentumize your overall future. One, there are going to be companies that are going to survive in the future, and their overall stocks are going to go down, way down. And I'm not one for stocks, but if you are a stock person, you would be able to acquire. But see, I use that for this example, that not only are this the stocks, it's going to be businesses. In Venezuela, I have clients that are in Venezuela, and before the overall height of the Venezuelan purposely caused economic crisis that the common people are going through, because the overall, those that have assets in Venezuela are not going through an economic crisis. They're going through an economic boom. They're not going through an economic bust. Very, very important. Same thing will happen here. And because some of my clients that are in Venezuela that actually took the class and was able to prepare, once the overall bus for the general population is not that they were the ones that were facilitating or creating it, if they didn't prepare, it was still going to happen. And one thing that we have to stop doing is we've got to stop making excuses for doing nothing. Got to stop making excuses for doing nothing. There are a lot of opportunities, and one of the things that happens is that when we have limited resources, we really have to be keen to opportunities. Not everything that's presented to you is an opportunity, no. But you have to be keen to opportunities, and you have to work to be keen at opportunities so that you can change the overall position that you're in to the best of your ability. Now, does that mean that it will always work? No. Go with it for where it should be, really, what I'm really saying here. But if you do nothing, nothing will change. Nothing will change. Not even the lottery. The lottery doesn't hand out tickets. You have to purchase one. But I'm not condoning you purchasing that or getting involved in that. I'm just saying. And the system is designed to have people in this position, disenfranchisement, divestment, and everything else. Yes, is there, and we know it's wrong. But the only way it's going to change is, one, if we walk away from it, and there's a way in which to walk away from it. How about this? They're not that smart. They're not that smart. Find out the ways in which you can leverage yourself properly, and you won't be as adversely by it, and then it will position you for sovereignty. Because some of the clients I have in Venezuela, when the crisis happened, they became, and their families became, significant controllers of assets, from the even from the smallest sense, because of what they were able to do before it happened. Then they realized that, oh my goodness, we are generationally wealthy all of a sudden. Some of them took it in the right light, where they wanted to do some very benevolent things. Some of it took it from the standpoint that, yeah, I came up and I want the system to keep everybody else down because I enjoy this new. They are the byproducts of what they are doing what they want. They are doing and benefiting from the system, and they enjoy that. They just didn't want the system to be ripping them off. You know how I always say, nobody wants to be a slave, but everybody wants to have one. And so that same transfer is going to happen for you and your families and everyone else. And right now it doesn't seem like it's, because that's the whole thing. It doesn't seem. But the last I checked, you was never in on any of the meetings on what they're going to be doing. So it's not supposed to seem for you to see it. How do you not resonate and feel it from discernment? Critical. So just wanted to say that, and then we'll get into some other things. But let me get into what's in the news. First article I posted, this one came from AP, Associated Press. U.S. Japan agreed to maximize diplomatic pressure on North Korea. U.S. and Japanese celebrity figurehead Japanese diplomats agreed Tuesday to maximize pressure on North Korea to resolve the tension over its nuclear program. And I will say that I do anticipate, and let me check if that stuff is already here. I do anticipate that North Korea will sever all diplomatic ties with the United States and call back its ambassador, and that is one of the steps before the overall launch of war. I would say for you and that watch mainstream media, whenever you see CNN starting to have more and more, when they start to have three and four reporters, two and three reporters in that area, that's how you know that they've been told that it's going to be a go in the overall war is going to kick off, and that's going to be good for their business. This is why it's better for them to do with those that are creating the war to be on their side. And when you see that, you know that this thing is about to happen. And I'll tell you, they almost give you a 2-week countdown, and I'm starting to see some signs that we may be in that area of 2-week countdown relatively soon. I hope it's not, but if it is, I'm ready. If it isn't, I'm ready to continue to do what needs to be done. So check that out. But let me see really quickly if no. Okay, cool. I don't see anything as of right now. So I do anticipate that that's going to happen soon. Okay, next article from What's in the News. Next article is going to be, I posted this one from Strategic Culture, Winning in Africa. In Nigeria and Central Africa, 4 American Special Forces soldiers were killed in an ambush by 50 fighters thought to be associated with ISIS. The U.S. officially said in this course of the attack, one U.S. soldier was left behind when others withdrew. So check out this that article. See what's going on. Everything is being set for this global war that is going to kick off. And it's already started. But the announcement of it will be coming relatively soon, far past its real inception. It's already started. Next article from Strategic Culture, Making History, China and Russia are transforming enemies into friends. The multipolar world order is here to stay. The U.S. is no longer the lone superpower, but rather one among two other nuclear armed powers, the sooner the U.S. realizes that, the better it will be for humanity. Well, humanity, you see what they're saying here. Humanity is going to make the U.S. do that, and that means that your overall quality of life, standard of living, so many things are going to be destroyed here. Next article, Rise posted this from ZDNet. Australia made 3D printing. Let me move this down. Sternum and rib cage implanted into a New York patient. Check out that article. Wow. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Check out that article. Next article, Rise posted this one. Man, that article's crazy. The 3D printer. Boy, I told you we're going to go from plastic people to printed people pretty soon. Good Lord. So here it comes. Next article, Rise posted this one from Survive Utopia. Vopedia, Survivopedia. 7 fall medicinal wildflowers you must harvest. Man, this is a must. This is a must, especially for what's going on. Thank you, Rise, for posting this. Crazy, crazy, crazy. You are dead. Most studies show mind still works after the body shows no sign of life. Check out that. The mind still works after you're dead, says scientists. Check out that article. Death just becomes even more scary. Scientists say people are aware that they're dead because their conscious continues to work after the body has stopped showing signs of life. That means that theoretically someone may even hear their own death being announced by the medics. And I will say this, I do have, in my opinion, I think that there's some real credibility to it. Just from my former things that I used to do, former profession, a couple of times where someone passed right while I was there, and just before they made the great transformation, we were communicating with each other, and then once they did, I can actually, you can actually feel the spirit, and it wasn't a painful or a sad, it was a beautiful thing. And it was a very peaceful, and so the overall serenity that was there was nothing like I've had ever experienced before. And it silenced amidst all of the noise and chaos and the confusion, and then the physical earthly things that were going on. It was like being in a tunnel where you have tunnel vision, tunnel hearing, but more of a, you're in a capsule or an atmosphere of peace, and it stays with you and stays there for a while, and I was able to continue to communicate with the individual. Nothing to fear at all. So great article, Rise. Next article. Rise posted this from, how much time? Okay. Rise posted this from the, what is this? From Reuters. U.S. carrier patrols off the Korean Peninsula in a warning to Pyongyang. So this is the USS Ronald is, I do anticipate some stuff, but it's not just there. Don't just look there. It's a bunch of other places. So, definitely be aware. Next article, Rise posted this one from Science Alert. 11-year-old has just become America's youngest scientist with this clever invention. and the little young lady is smiling from ear to ear. So check out that article. Next article, I posted this one from Natural Society. Says a study, how magnesium supplements could help with your depression. Many people need to be on magnesium deficient. That definitely helps you to be able to lower your stress and stop being so depressed about different things, because it's a chemical imbalance, and the system knows that. So they're going to give you the opposite of what magnesium does. To instead of supplementing to help you with depression, they're going to So very, very important. So with that being said, there's a bunch of other great articles that are here. Definitely check it out. Can't go through them all. And so want to definitely start to show. So if you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 866-510-9025. Hit **. We'll bring you up. And my man Jerry there. Jerry, I saw you, you had called just before the start of the show. Couldn't do it because it was getting ready for the show. But we'll hit you up soon that after a little later on tonight because I'm going to be traveling in a minute. So, okay, so let's jump into today's show. A video I want to play, but I'm not going to play it yet. First, I want to talk about, listen, being prepared by you all that are preparing. I'm so glad that you are doing that. Don't ever give up on that because, believe me, it is necessary. The great creator would never want you to be unprepared for things because that's the truth of the matter. And let me say this. Those of you who are preparing, even if you're just preparing, let's say you only $10 of discretionary funds per month. If you're using that to prepare, you're in a far identify that stuff ain't gonna go right. There's normalcy bias is not gonna be. This is not the direction. Normal. I can't have a bias to normal. I'm biased towards things being normal and everything happened the way it did yesterday. Well, the system doesn't work that way, and it tries to hypnotize you into sleep. And one of the things that we have to do, we have to wake up, but it's more than just waking up. We got to snap out of it because it is a state of being hypnotized. Rise calls it being under a spell. Brother Braggs even alludes to it to being under a spell, which I definitely think we have to break ourselves from. I would even say from the biblical standpoint of Adam and Eve, that was a spell that they were under, and it was broken by what the great creator had. But most of us think it's the other way, but it's actually from my understanding of what goes on with man is the opposite. It's the opposite. You see, think about, I want you, I'm going to just say this. Read the overall story of Adam and Eve, not from what you've been told, but with reading comprehension. From this standpoint, flip it around. And don't get mad at me and everything else. No, I'm not going against with our parents taught us and everything else, but maybe in the way I am. But the thing is that I'm questioning for a reason. If something can't stand the test of a question, that's because there's a dictator that doesn't want to be exposed. So here's what I want you to do. Just from the Judeo-Christian book of the Bible, the story of Adam and Eve. Question it from this standpoint, just for a second. Let's just say, just for a second, that the actual tree of good and evil was actually the cure for their induced state of being sheepled. Think about it. They were under the same mind control and the same intoxication and the same depression and the same chemical and synthetic drugs that have changed their overall natural body tendencies to where Adam and Eve, just switch the story around for a minute and then think of how powerful and how strong that could be and then make the case from there. Then whatever you think is relevant, let that be what you pursue. But I want you to think about it from this standpoint for a second. Let's just say Adam and Eve were slaves, and they didn't know they were slaves. And because they were slaves, they did what they were doing because they didn't know any better. And then the actual serpent was the one that was telling them, you don't have to. This is ridiculous. You need to be healed. You need to get off of those synthetic prescription drugs that somebody's giving you and get back to your natural state of who you truly are. Go to that tree right there and eat of its fruit. And it's the fruit of, listen to the story, of knowledge of good and evil. So if you eat of it, you'll know the difference between good and evil, and then you'll have a choice in which you want to engage in. Uh-oh. Go to the tree. And I just want to say that, how many trees has the great creator made that has been beneficial to us? How many trees that the great creator has made that has been beneficial to us that man has induced that we and has directed and ordered and we've obeyed the cutting down and to sever those trees from the earth and no longer bear fruit? So just hear me out for a second. Don't get mad. Not saying this is true. I'm just saying, hey, look at the power of it. So both of them were approached. And then Adam finally said, you know what? Something's up. He goes to the tree and he partakes of the fruit of the tree. And he's cured immediately. How many of you have actually been beneficially cured or put in a better physical, mental, and spiritual and holistic state from what the great creator for? And now you always hear me say, and this is a play on it, for every disease that man has created, the great creator has a herb to cure it. How many of you have actually gotten away from prescription things, synthetic things, and did natural things and has done wonders for your natural body? So Adam partakes of a natural remedy. Then he gives it to Eve. Then he realizes something. Yo, Eve, we've been had. We're butt naked and we've been abused. And not naked in the physical sense, but we're naked because we're being stripped of our inheritance, our birthright. We're being subjugated and enslaved. And immediately, what they partook in ate actually cured them of their illness. Then all of a sudden, don't get mad, but what reason would the great creator need to walk in the cool of the day? I tell you, none at all. Read the story. Why would the great creator need to walk in the cool of the day? We know the great creator is omnipresent and is the overall spiritual energy. Is not a physical representation. Walking is a physical engagement. In the cool of the day is because the living entity that was walking was subject to the atmosphere. The only reason why you walk in the cool of the day, then had to ask, where are you? You got to look for them. How many times have you looked for your children? The reason why you had to look for your children is because you're not the great creator that's omnipresent. You have to request them when they're not in your physical sight. How many of you called out for your children? Uh-oh, y'all see where I'm going with this, right? You see where I'm going with this. Not saying it's true, but I'm saying it's right there. Sometimes people have taught us to interpret something for their benefit. The great creator is still a great creator. You still have a relationship with the great creator. That has not been severed. But something interfered with that relationship known as man's agenda of subjugation and enslavement. Let me ask you something. If man would subjugate and enslave the way that they have already, you think that they would be honest about a story that they write in a book? Last time I checked, the great creator never has written anything in an inanimate object. Everything that the great creator does lives. No need for a book. The truth doesn't need a book. So, goes looking. Can't find them. Looking for your children. You can't find them. What do? You start calling to them. What's the first thing you say? Where you been? What are you doing? You reprimand them. And you chastise them. And what does the child say? I was hiding from you because you're abusive to me. I'm going to just leave it there, however you want to interpret it, however you want to see it. I just realized something, and I'm going to tell you, from being a former in law enforcement for a significant part of my adult life, one thing is that you never ever have emotions to your investigation. You just try to follow the truth, and where it leads you, you don't care. You just want the truth to be real. That's for some people. However, I know the different things, but that it was for me. And I would say for you, investigate. When you investigate, you remove emotion, and you always try to follow the trail of the truth, as much as others will hide it and everything else, but it still will be present. Is that, can you find the overall positions to put it all together? So in that, whenever you read something for a truthful standpoint, you ask questions all the way through. So very, 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 very powerful. So in my opinion, we got my man Roz in queue. Let me go to my man Roz. Roz, what's going on, brother?
Peace, Brother Dave. How's everything? Good?
Everything is lovely, my man. Much appreciate you, brother. What's going on?
I appreciate you, too. It's just funny you discuss what you discussed, because many years ago, when I was in Trinidad, my Rastafarian cousin discussed that passage. He had told me that that the Bible is two people's stories intertwined. One would be the story of Europeans, the other would be our story. And when he explained the Adam and Eve story from the perspective of us, because I totally understand the story being their history, but when he told it from the perspective it pertained to us, he had discussed the fact that God was given a physical attribute, physical form, and the reason he couldn't come out in the heat of the day is because he was white. And Adam and Eve were black people, and in the Bible, when they talk about God having to tell Adam and Eve to procreate and multiply, it was them controlling non-white people's procreation. And when they ate of the fruit, eating of the fruit in itself was an act of sexual act, because the fruit is the sexual organs of a plant. But in addition to that, when they realized they were naked, that recognition had to do with the fact that they did not have to wait for the creator, for the white man, to tell them when to procreate, but they could procreate when they wanted to. And that was, when you told me that, you brought that memory back to me. And the whole idea, if you look at what we're dealing with now, is the control of our procreation, whether it's the Zika virus, Planned Parenthood, eugenics, chemtrails, chemicals in the food to, you know, change the gender of the people who partake of that food.
Right.
All of that stuff has to do with the propagation of the whole LGBT thing.
Go ahead, Ross.
I was just saying, all of that has to do with the control of the procreation of the non-white people, and that was why when they describe the deity, you can't get any other impression of the deity except for them being a non-melanated being. And again, they're taking something that was metaphysical and they're turning it into something physical. No different than they turn Jesus from the S-U-N to the S-O-N and personified the physical son in the form of Jesus the Christ. So it's the same thing where it's like really a play on words. And when, like Brother Braggs repeatedly says, which I love him, when he repeatedly says words are spells, that's the type of stuff he's talking about. And that level of understanding for the average person who reads the Bible is usually missing. So I just wanted to toss that out there and just say, perfect passage. Thanks again. I'm going to kick back and listen to the rest of the show.
For sure, brother. Greatly appreciate it. It's so much. I didn't want to infringe on anyone. I'm not trying to insult anyone. I'm not trying to take an aggression or a stand of aggression or be passive aggressive to anyone about what it is that they believe. because your free will is important to me. Because your free will, even those that I don't agree with, their free will is important to me. Because I realize that is a great, great gift, and I'm not trying to control their free will. There's an old thing that, you know, you hear them say it now, I'm just saying. So I'm just saying. And what I'm just saying is that saying for you to question what is wrong with questioning? Nothing at all. What happens when you don't question? Well, when you don't question, you always hear me say this. Blind faith is always the first step to genocide. And I want to play this video and carry it through the next hour, do the break and everything else, and have 15 minutes of the show left over, because I will be traveling as well. Scotty, if you would play this in the second and through the break, and not through the break, but make sure we do the break and then come back to it. I want you to really listen to genocide, not from the standpoint of who the genocide is against, but that the genocide exists. If the genocide exists, that means evil reigns, and evil can never ever resonate with the power of love. It resonates with the love of power. So, blind faith, when we don't question, we take that first step to genocide. So, if you would, Scotty, if you would start that that video, and then in an hour from now, we'll just take it to then, and then, you know, we'll talk about it for some questions and comments. Well, let's do not an hour. Let's do when we have at least 30 minutes left in the show, right at 6:30 Central Standard Time. We'll come back and talk about it. But until then, let's listen to this video. Scotty, if you would be so kind, brother, to start that. Until then, we're greatly appreciated. Listen to Tando Radio Show. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Genocide.
I mean, why were they doing this?
Terror.
Best-selling historian Daniel Goldhagen explores the motive.
Genocide never happens as a surprise.
And explodes the myth.
These people had to be eliminated.
Behind a crime.
It was cruelty that overcame us, me and my fellow criminals.
Genocide is always politics.
That's worse than war. Worse Than War was made possible by the Pershing Square Foundation and the Einhorn Family Charitable Trust. Additional funding was provided by
people here murdered other people?
Yes, you can't be here if you haven't killed.
Nubwo wabutarishe wagiye mu gitero kishe waragiye urica ujya mu gitero kica abantu babiri batatu ujya mu gitero kica abantu urugamba utarisha abantu cyangwa utarakoze bufatanye cyangwa gufatanya buguha gufata no gutera inkunga abandi bantu ngo bice.
Can you show me how the person was hacked? I've been thinking and writing about genocide for nearly 30 years. It's something people don't much like to talk about, and about which most of us remain dangerously misinformed.
Good evening. A new book called Hitler's Willing Executioners, a highly controversial account of the Holocaust.
The American Daniel Goldhagen says the excuse of only obeying orders won't wash.
A controversial book about the Holocaust, raising a troubling new question. Were Nazi killers helped by hundreds of thousands of ordinary Germans?
They subjected the victims to gratuitous brutality, incessant cruelty. So the picture that emerges is not of reluctant people who are compelled to do what they did, but people who agreed with the program, who believed that the death of the Jews was necessary and just.
I've spent my professional life trying to dispel the many myths that cloud people's judgment and prevent us from doing something effective to stop the killing. Genocides happen in every corner of the world, to every type of people. The numbers in the past 100 years are staggering. The Turks slaughtered more than 1 million Armenians during World War I. In the 1930s and 40s, the Japanese killed millions across Asia. In the Soviet Union, the estimated number of deaths in the Gulag camps and beyond is more than 8 million. The Germans slaughtered 6 million Jews and millions more during World War II. In the 1950s and 60s, the Communist Chinese killed an estimated 30 million. And during the 1970s, the Khmer Rouge killed 1.7 million Cambodians, fully 20% of that country's population. Bosnia, Rwanda, Congo, Darfur. All told, in our time, there have been more than 100 million innocent victims of genocide. More than all the combat deaths in all the wars fought during that time everywhere in the world. Based on the human toll alone, genocide and mass slaughter are worse problems plaguing humanity than war. We need to understand why.
It is a great difficult task you're facing to convey human beings whose behavior seems to defy understanding. They were beyond belief.
In my work, I have benefited from the wisdom of a valued mentor, a scholar of genocide and survivor of the Holocaust.
Well, you know, at this point, though...
By the way, let me just remind you...
He also happens to be my father.
When the first news of the gas chambers came, the Jewish community was very skeptical of it.
Right, but we're in a different time now. Nobody disbelieves that these things happen.
That's quite
what
true.
What they have difficulty understanding is why it happened.
Yes.
And accepting notions that violate their own common sense understandings of the world.
There's a certain paradox here, because sometimes one accepts very highly, seemingly original, profound theories, and sometimes the explanation is relatively simple.
I think the actual explanations are threatening and unsettling to people. The notion that ordinary people would willfully butcher other people, torture them, including children, slaughter them, is a very disturbing notion to people, particularly if they're looking upon people with whom they identify. And so they seek explanations which are more, I wouldn't say more comforting, but less threatening to them.
As early as I can remember thinking serious thoughts, my father and I have been talking about these things. As a scholar, he journeyed into the darkest chapters of the human experience, seeking to understand not only what happened, but why. Now I am continuing the journey he began, a journey that, in a sense, I have been on my entire life. People need to understand that nothing is inevitable about genocide. It boils down to a series of choices. Leaders choose to initiate the killing. Ordinary people make a conscious choice to participate. And those with the power to prevent or stop it choose to do nothing. I study genocides because I believe the more we know about how and why genocides happen, the more we can get political leaders and ordinary people to make different choices. Imagine if one day people in your neighborhood were dragged out of their homes and killed in the street. You would want the killers stopped and punished, and you would want to know that it would never happen again. Why should it be any different when the victims are somewhere else? Like the people in your community, each genocide victim is an individual. A father, a mother, a daughter, a son. As a scholar, I spend most of my time in archives and libraries. But over the past year, I traveled to these somewhere else's, the sites of some of the worst mass murders of our time.
We spent decades studying Nazism, the Holocaust, genocide, but I'd never been in a gas chamber before.
I started my journey mindful that there has never been a time during the past century when our planet was free of mass murder, including now.
For 5 long years, Darfur has been a scene of devastation and destruction. 300,000 people have died, and 2.5 million have fled their homes as the Sudanese government has tried to crush a rebellion against its rule.
The plight of Darfur has moved people of conscience around the world and has only intensified my desire to know more. To see the places where the horrors have happened, meet the people who were there, and ask the kinds of questions you have to ask, even though sometimes you may dread hearing the answer.
When the genocide began, what happened to you?
Genocide itangiye we bya kugenda
cyebite
na famiye yawe
hari rero papa umbyara bamwishe bamutemaguje imihoro.
She said her dad was killed, like he was chopped, he was cut with the machete.
Na mama nuko baramutemaguye nawe.
And the mom was chopped, the way she's saying it, she was chopped with a machete.
Na musaza wanjye wankurikiraga nawe baramutemaguye.
And the brother was also...
Who killed her family? Were these just local people who lived here?
He says they were neighbors. More to that, they were even friends to the family.
In genocide after genocide, these are the questions that continue to be asked. How do neighbors end up turning against neighbors? Why do the killers kill? Here in Rwanda, more than 800,000 men, women, and children were killed over the course of 3 months. Most were ethnic Tutsi, murdered by members of the Hutu majority. Face to face with machetes, clubs, and guns. Hitler's gas chambers did not kill with such deadly efficiency. When people killed the victims, did they try to kill them as painlessly as possible, or did they try to make them suffer?
Ese mu gihe abantu bicaga abatutsi babanzaga kubatoteza kubababaza cyangwa bahitaga babica
byose byaterwaga waramwirukankanaga yagusiga ukamwirukankana cyane ukamugendaho wamwicaga bitewe n'uko yakuruhije ariko wamufataga ntaterehijwe amugusha waramugusha ukigendera rimwe na rimwe asiga utaramunogonoye akanagonorwa n'abandi byaterwaga n'uburyo rero wamufashemo uburyo yirukanse uburyo yakuruhije ukavuga uti wanduhije nshareka nanjye nkwice nabi.
I find it hard to understand, and I want to understand how people could approach other people who are begging for their lives and screaming in pain and chop them.
Cyane kibazo gikomeye cyane kugisubiza kuko iyo ujya kugikora ubona nawe ufite umubiri mu byukuri.
It's a very tough question to answer because they have the same flesh like yours.
Biranabaje cyane nk'umwana nk'umwana iyo yakuririraga ubona ari agahinja gatoya njye ntabwo nigeze nica akana ariko twageze ukigaya ukabona nk'akana gato cyane kakiga guseka karimo karagusekera wahize ukakica gusa ni nk'ikintu cyaje mu mitima igihukira budika icuraburindi riraza kuko nk'umuntu kugira ngo aguhagarare imbere nta mbaraga afite uzamura umuhoro cyangwa uzamira umpira umukubite ati mbabarira rwose nguhe n'amafaranga cyangwa mbabarire rwose nyijyanire ujye kuntunga ndi umukobwa mwiza ubyange uvuga uti oya ndakwishe nyine cyi jenoside niyo dutekereje tugasubiza amaso inyuma tukabireba natwe biradushobera ntabwo rero ntabona uko nkigusubiza ariko igisubizo nabona cya bugufi ni ikintu cy'igihu cy'ikintu cyicura buri ntakwita ngo ni ubujiji aho ntabwo ari ubujiji ni ubugome twakoranaga n'abandi bagenzi banjye mu Rwanda hirya no hino yewe n'abari abahunze badutereranye urugamba badushumuye bakigendera.
Ellie's word cruelty could not be more accurate. Cruelty is at the heart of genocide. The killers don't just eradicate the targeted people, but brutalize them in ways that far exceed what is needed to kill them. I see the evidence of such cruelty everywhere I go. I came to Guatemala where a massive effort has been underway to literally uncover the truth about the government's mass slaughter of 200,000 indigenous Maya during the 1980s. Outside Guatemala, few people even know about the genocide.
Buenos días. Los fusileros. Pero los tenían inmovilizados antes de.
Do we know, is this a family or two families or they're adults?
Sabemos aquí que son todos adultos hombres.
Sí, ajá, adultos hombres. Pero diferentes familias.
A este cuerpo, pero allá tienen a otros pies. Y tienes los dos cráneos. Ahí hay un cráneo y aquí está el otro. Es pequeña la fosa, ¿no?
Sí, es pequeña. Ajá. Probablemente enterraron uno y sin
otro. Y entonces se puede. No sabemos ahorita en este momento cuántos hay. Ahorita es mínimo tres. Pero es posible que los demás cuerpos estén abajo.
In these hills, the Guatemalan military conducted a scorched earth campaign against Maya and leftist insurgents. The Mayan people, they said, were inherently subversive and an impediment to progress. The government's strategy was summed up in a grim aphorism of the time: to kill the fish, you have to drain the pond. Here in the mountain hamlet of Plan de Sanchez, they drained the pond on July 18, 1982.
Y ahí estamos nosotros en las casas con nuestras familias. Y toda la gente fue traída en sus casas, niñas y mujeres, y fue traída aquí, y aquí fue la masacre.
The military would separate the women and the men. Sometimes they would take the infants out of the women's arms and simply smash them on the ground, kill them right there in front of everybody. They cut tongues out. They opened pregnant women's bellies and dashed fetuses against trees. They burned people alive. We know this because there were people who, even in the midst of this mayhem and mass killing, somehow managed to hide behind a door, underneath a pile of corn husks, and watch.
Ya no pudo retirarme más lejos, ahí me quedé escondido. Pero ya viendo ya los, digamos, cuando ellos van están entrando en la casa, sí, esta es el lugar donde yo, donde está el chorro, de donde yo estuve, cuando el ejército entraron ya a la casa de mi hermana, y ahí, en ese lugarcito, me quedé durante todo el tiempo matando a la familia. Sí. Desde aquí escucharon los gritos de las mujeres, de los hombres, de los niños, cuando lo empezaron a matar. Los bombardearon, lo ametrallaron. Ya cuando terminaron de ametrallar, rociaron la casa y le pegaron fuego.
Only once I got to Guatemala did I realize how remote these mountain villages really are. Government leaders call these subsistence farmers a threat to the well-being of the country, but they did not pose a threat to anyone. The Guatemalan perpetrators obliterated one such community after another.
No morían los pobres y le agarraron los niños, le agarraron y los mataban así, en la cabeza, y después los tiran allí.
Las fueron apartando las patojas y lo fueron a encerrar en otra casa para violar después de matarlos a todos los que fueron reunidos.
Cuando estoy trabajando con fosas de donde hay niños, eso es mucho más representativo para mí, porque inmediatamente comparo la edad que tienen los cuerpos de los niños que estoy recuperando con la edad de mis hijos. Y bueno, pues le tengo que dar muchas gracias a la vida que mis hijos no tengan que vivir en una situación como estos niños hubieran quedado ahí.
Everywhere I go, the faces of children haunt me the most. I have children too, and it's hard not to think about them as I hear stories, over and over, about the cruelty children suffered.
It's just one of them where they killed around 177 people, most of them children, and the others women, so there wasn't a single adult male. So which can, at, you know, to let you understand that these are not combat deaths.
Oh no, you know, it's very common in mass murders for the perpetrators to do this to children. It happened in Rwanda, in the Holocaust.
Freddy Pecciarelli, a Guatemalan native raised in America, is in charge of collecting and cataloging the bones.
They portray a message. When they do this, they're also killing the seed of evil, according to them, whether it be in Nazi Germany or whether it be in Guatemala in the 1980s. Well, this is the bone lab, or the forensic anthropology laboratory.
Freddy is amassing a record of the atrocities committed by the Guatemalan perpetrators and providing the victims' families with remains to bury properly.
The bones hold
the story of what happened to a person during their life, and might even tell us what happened to them during the event of their death, and even what happened to them after death. So here, for example, we can see how, and if you want, I'll allow you to feel the difference, so you can see this is a very sharp cut, and if you run your hand through it, it's very, very smooth. Mm-hmm. See, that was caused by a machete striking the right side of the head and also cutting the atlas. And you see, when you match it up anatomically, you can see that this trauma here is related to this strike here. And basically what they try to do here is decapitate the person. Now, what we've seen usually is that these people are not very knowledgeable of anatomy, so the decapitations, as you'd expect, were not always successful. So you have repeated blows to the head. Somebody's trying to separate the head from the body. Very typical of overkill. And sometimes of even crimes of passion.
Overkill. There's a word I don't think I'll ever hear the same way again. If the killers were simply doing their duty to wipe out an insurgency, as they claim, they would execute their victims quickly and be done with it. You have to wonder why we see so much evidence of such murderous passion, especially against women and children.
For example, this is a child here, a very young child. I wouldn't even dare to tell you the age unless what the anthropologist is working on the case. But, and you can compare, this is the first rib.
Wow.
So, and if you compare this to that one, you can see the difference. I mean, the first rib is about that big. So this is a very, very small.
Where's this? Just holding the tiny little bone. You know.
Well. Yeah. See, I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's a way of humanly understanding this, because it goes beyond what I believe humans can do. But obviously, I mean, the more I say that, the more I understand.
It's hard for
it.
Me to believe that you're saying this, given what you
because I want to believe that we're not capable of these things, even though I want to believe that this is wrong. So doing this has to be wrong. If I accept that this is right, and if I excuse it, then I can't do this anymore.
Freddie is not alone. Most of us find it hard to come to terms with the capacity of human beings to do such horrible things to others. But we have to make sense of it. As irrational as they seem, these are not the acts of crazed individuals. These are people who know what they are doing, believe it's right, and make a conscious choice to act.
Hello. Yeah. I'm Daniel Goldhagen.
Yeah, it's many errors.
It's
nice to see you.
Ich habe ein Ehrenbuch. Das Lied hier. Dieses Lied.
Ja, es zittern die morschen Knochen der Welt vor dem großen Krieg. Wir haben den Frieden gebrochen. Für uns war ein großer Sieg. Wir werden weiter marschieren, wenn alles in Scherben fällt. Denn heute gehört uns Deutschland und morgen die ganze Welt. Ja, es war voll. Und ich habe das mitgesungen. Ich habe das genauso mitgesungen. Ah. Und ich habe mir nicht damals bei der SS...
Können Sie das immer noch singen?
Wenn du wissen, Sie, das ist aber wirklich eine Frage. Also das
bitte?
Das ist eine Frage, ob ich das singen könnte. Das ist das was Unmenschliches, ja.
Like most Germans, Otto Ernst Duschelei grew up with a worldview in which he saw himself as a member of the master race, while many others fell into the category of subhumans or Untermenschen.
When you were in school?
Yes.
When you were in the Hitler Youth?
Yes.
What did you learn, for example, about Untermenschen? What did that word mean to you?
Ja, Untermenschen. Untermenschen, das waren für uns die Russen, die Polen, Zigeuner. Zum Beispiel waren das auch Menschen, die meinetwegen geistig behindert waren. Ja.
Lebensunwertes Leben.
Ja, auch die. Das waren nicht wert, die hatten keinen, die sollten nicht mehr weiterleben. Sie wissen das ja selbst. Ich meine, ich denke da an das Tagebuch von der Anne Frank. Ja, wie sie geschrieben hat in ihrem Versteck. Menschen, die dazu gebracht werden, andere Menschen als minderwertig oder als anders aussehende und anders denkende Menschen als minderwertig anschließen sich durch ihre Haltung und ihre Worte selbst aus der menschlichen Gemeinschaft aus.
Und war das das Hauptproblem hier in Deutschland während der Nazizeit?
Ich glaube nicht nur in Deutschland.
Aber nicht nur, aber auch?
Auch, ja, ja. Dass wir den anderen nicht den Menschen gesehen haben.
It's striking that it is a former SS man invoking Anne Frank who makes this point. It is an important one. It is that failure to see the humanity in others which makes it possible for the killers to commit their crimes. I would add that it's the belief that those others are dangerous enemies which inspires the perpetrators to kill with such zeal. Years ago, I encountered an episode of the Holocaust which spoke volumes about the willfulness and dedication of the killers. And I got to know one of the survivors, Lily Silbiger.
I have a map here with me which actually outlines the route from Helmbrecht to Volari. Here is Helmbrecht.
In the last months of World War II, as the Allied forces neared the concentration camps housing Jews and others, Germans emptied their camps and drove their prisoners on forced marches through the nearby towns and countryside. The death marches left a trail of corpses in their wake, and the marching prisoners were described by more than one witness as the walking dead. These are actual photos of the young women who were with Lily on the march. On the summer day Lily revisited the route of the death march with me, the countryside was beautiful. But in the spring of 1945, it was cold and bleak. Lily's guards actually had received explicit orders not to kill any more Jews, but they willfully defied their superiors. They drove her and the others, starving, wearing nothing more than rags, day after day through the frigid countryside.
Sometimes we wouldn't even get food for 24 hours, for 48 hours. People resorted to anything that was found with it, anything rotten that was, you know, you just grabbed at anything.
And you were 16 at the time.
Yeah. And in one place, someone broke into a pantry or some place where we arrived and stole some loaves of bread. And for that, they selected 50 girls and killed them over a mass grave there. We had to come back and cover them. And there were many of them still alive when we had to do that.
So you had to help bury them alive?
We had to put the earth, cover them with earth. So this was the biggest horrible. You know. Period.
One of the astonishing things is that they were marching the Jewish prisoners literally to the last day of the war. Instead of running away to avoid capture, they stayed with the prisoners. They continued to deny them food.
Absolutely.
They continued to beat them. They continued to kill them. They continued to do it to the very end.
We knew the Russians were closing in there, and then we heard artillery, some planes flying overhead, heard some bombings in the distance, so we knew they were very close. They managed for such a long time to keep ahead of the Allies, going in nowhere, you know, to a place to nowhere, just to drag us, just to... just go in circles, actually. That's what was happening. They didn't know themselves what they were doing. They could have easily left us wherever we were and just disappear, and they didn't.
They believed the Jews were evil incarnate, an enemy of humankind, a threat to the well-being and future existence of Germany.
And if you believe that, just as if you believe someone's about to attack your child, you'll do anything you can.
Yeah.
Each of us tries to make sense of the horrors in his or her own way. Over the years, I have talked with many who grapple with these issues, but never one more thoughtful than a man I met in Rwanda, Tarcisse Karugarama, the country's Minister of Justice.
Here we're speaking now as two people trying to understand a very difficult set of circumstances, the ways in which victims were not just killed in, if we can call it the least painful way, but were hacked to death, were tortured. The zeal and passion with which the perpetrators sought out the victims, it's not easy to find people hiding in the countryside.
Mass hysteria is very difficult to explain. People reach a period when they're involved in mass hysteria, when they can no longer be accountable for their actions.
But you certainly don't want to take that as a legal position, do you?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I'm just trying to explain, because I've been around in this judiciary for some time now, and I've met all sorts of contradictions. So the one you're talking about is a major contradiction. The brutality with which they did the killing is shocking. What, once people had stepped beyond the first step of actually killing, throwing a child down and hacking them to death, opening the womb of pregnant, there's nothing that was left that they couldn't do. Because they were being told by the politicians who are giving them the alcohol that if you don't destroy these people, these animals, these, they are coming to finish you, none of you will survive. And they had been made to believe it. I don't want to be a, to give an excuse for them. They were willing killers, there's no doubt in my mind. But you see, at the back of their mind, the radio is telling them they are coming to finish you. If you don't kill them yourselves, their plan is to finish you.
In Massachusetts, I live just a few miles from a large community of Cambodian Americans. Many of them are survivors of the genocide that took the lives of 20% of Cambodia's population during the 1970s. One in five Cambodians. It is a chilling statistic. In the spring of 1975, a communist rebel group, the Khmer Rouge, conquered the country. They wanted to turn Cambodia into a Marxist agrarian utopia, which to them meant destroying virtually all vestiges of modern civilization.
First day when they marched into the city, we were so happy that the wars ended. We were joyful and we saw the soldier came, there was peace come, and no more fighting, no more war. And then suddenly everything just disappeared. I saw a lot of soldiers in black uniforms close to my home. The soldiers spread everywhere, shooting guns in the air and asked, let's go, let's go.
Within 3 days, Khmer Rouge cadres emptied Cambodia's cities, forcing millions into the rural camps they called cooperatives, but which came to be known to the outside world as the killing fields.
Think about 2 miles per day, 3 miles per day that we could move because of so many people. And along the road, the bodies along the road everywhere. It just, the scene is just awful.
The extent of their violent transformation of Cambodian society still boggles the mind. And it was all begun by one man, known as Pol Pot, supported by a small inner circle. Genocide is always the decision of one leader or a small group of leaders. These individuals make a choice to initiate the killing, which in every case means they could have also chosen not to. The leaders' goals vary, depending on the time, place, and circumstances. Pol Pot wanted to radically transform Cambodian society. The Turkish leader Mehmet Talat wanted to secure Turkey's decaying empire. Adolf Hitler wanted to create a vast political empire ruled by the German master race. Colonel Théoniste Bagosora and his fellow Hutu leaders wanted to secure political power in Rwanda for the Hutu. And in the Balkans, Slobodan Milosevic wanted to permanently redraw the political map of the region.
Genocide is always politics. Of course, there are political goals. Those political goals can be reached in different ways. Some people think that exterminating a group would help their goals, so that's why they do it. Slobodan Milosevic thought at that time that he could, because of the overwhelming military power, make some territorial gains in Croatia and Bosnia. So he attacked. The fulfilling of their mission was to make a greater Serbia. In order to make greater Serbia, you had to exterminate people in your way.
Serbia is right there across the Drina River, and lots of Serb-controlled territory in the central part of the country. They wanted to link those two zones, right? But if you had a significant number of Muslims along the eastern or the western banks of that river, you had a kind of barrier between those two Serbian areas. So these people had to be eliminated.
These things are done in cold blood. This is a design, this is a plan, this is a calculation, of course. This is not a reaction to something. This, unfortunately, here is a planned genocide, as is any other genocide, because it's not possible to kill a big number of people without prior preparation, mental preparation, intellectual preparation, military preparation.
President Šalajić is right. There's a misconception that genocides erupt spontaneously out of deep-seated passions or ethnic conflicts. But there is nothing spontaneous about genocide. In this villa in the suburbs of Berlin, the Nazi leadership discussed their detailed plans to exterminate the Jews of Europe. These typewritten minutes document the meeting and list country by country the 11 million Jews they planned to kill. One of those was Eric Goldhagen, the 10-year-old boy in what was then Romania, now Ukraine, who would grow up to become my father.
The Nazi victory would have been tantamount even worse than it would be like a nuclear war almost. The destruction would be, it's perhaps more easier to recover from a nuclear assault than it would be from a Nazi victory.
I've asked him to join me on part of my journey, to return to where he lived during the Holocaust.
So have you talked to Mom about our trip to Chernobyl?
Yes, she is very enthusiastic about it. She encourages me to go. You know, Mom is always someone and believing. She believes that the past has to be preserved and remembered. And she has helped me overcome my natural reluctance to go.
You know, when I told her that she had to work on you, she said she never works on you. I knew I had an ally.
A very subtle way, you know, she works on me.
All you have to do is to envision what would have happened if Hitler had won the war. There would be mass graves everywhere, a vast concentration camp, and what I call in Greek a necropolis, a city of death. And even Germany itself would have been transformed. What most Germans don't understand is that Hitler would have done to Germany things which even the worst enemy of Germany wouldn't have done. He would have destroyed the Christian churches, killed the insane. And above all, and this is the important point, he would have converted the younger generation into a race of barbarians.
There is a widely held misconception that the Germans' efficiency and technology, the trains and the gas chambers, made it possible for them to kill so many so quickly. As we've seen in Rwanda and elsewhere, leaders do not need sophisticated technology to kill on a vast scale. It is the will, and not the way, that is critical. In Rwanda, the Hutu leaders did what all genocidal leaders do. They tapped into the prejudices and beliefs that people already held. Generations of Hutu had grown up being taught that the Tutsi are dangerous and inhuman.
It was easy to mobilize Hutu for the killing.
And live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Okay, welcome back everyone to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. And if you'd like to get in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 866-510-9025, 866-510-9025. Then hit **, and I won't see you in queue, but if you had just say, excuse me, and we will definitely hear you and will want to bring you up. I hope that you were able to hear that the presentation, and it's actually posted inside of BTR community. If you would like to see it, it's more. We'll probably do some of the rest of it. Very, very important. So I want to just give our listeners a opportunity to express themselves about what they heard and what their overall thoughts are. Because I will say this, is that one of the main things is this, is that whenever in society, part of being civilized means that you have to be brutally murderous. And whenever someone is a threat to you, by you being civilized instead of wild, and of wild means and of wild natures, untamed, whenever you're tamed, you're actually trained to attack. Attack those that threaten you just from the mere threat that is not substantial or meaningful is vow. And I want to just to express that one of the things about politics, being a politician or being in the politics, this is why I'm a political atheist. I'm a political atheist because of this reason. All politics are sown, rooted, and fundamentally based in genocide. In order to be affiliated with any political organization, that means that you have given over to the overall practice of genocide. Many would not like to hear that, but that is the truth. In politics, there is the greatest mass murdering that happens and that is sanctioned by the state. It's no longer mass murder, it's engaging in genocide for those that threaten you, or those that you want to seize what they have, or those that you want to enslave. Look at all of the wars that were politically mixed or politically motivated by the bankers. There's a reason why you have political parties. It's the same reason why you have the Nazi Party. The reason why you have political affiliation, the same reason why you have the general genocidal affiliations of human history. And it circumvents the globe. And this is what the system teaches from a very young age in the school, that if you live here, you look like this, you earn this, then this is your overall political affiliation or your genocidal affiliation.
Hey, Dave, I got a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Scotty.
On the Nazi stuff, this is the second time I done heard this comment about those in Rwanda killed faster than the Nazis. Now, let's put that into context. That's because they just went out and they was killing. And they wasn't rounding up the people to put them to work in factories for the war effort, nor were they robbing them of their riches. They just went on a killing spree. So I'm like, I just suspect some racism, white supremacy, when they try to hold up this African nation as being more efficient at killing than the Nazis. Okay? So that they're just I don't know why they say that when the circumstances were totally different. And you do got a couple of callers on the board, but I'll leave you with this.
Well, you know why that is because those that create the overall, when they produce it, they're going to produce it from their overall political affiliation. Because when you're not politically affiliated, you look at it for the substance of the truth. And when you don't look at it, then that's why you have it categorized, or that's why you have it presented that way. This genocidal murder, because really is the emphasis here is not to stop it. It is actually used to enhance it and to further it. By saying these people, instead of this is the whole system that is deeply rooted in everything that we do. It substantiates and validates and it upholds that whole nature. So let's go to some of these callers. Scotty, whoever you would like to bring up.
I wasn't finished with my comment, Dave. My comment is plenty of people who are non-political have become victims of genocide. And it's my understanding that everything is political. Every people activity on the planet is governed by politics, because politicians write laws. Then they get the law enforcers to force the people to obey those laws or punish them if they don't. But my thought is, you know, anybody can become a victim of genocide. It doesn't matter whether you engage in the politics or not.
Oh, yeah, I definitely. But the thing is that if we truly want to, if we're truly sincere about stopping it, if we're truly sincere about changing that overall direction, then we have to have an honest approach to it all. It's the politics that kill. Because every political stand will always take a defensive military stance in appearance, but its overall objective is offensive. And it's the continuance of the genocide. Because today's, we look at the political affiliations, and this is why I'm a political atheist. Because they teach you to be political in all schools. And the intellectual cabal realizes that there's great leverage by starting with people very early. Today's victims will be tomorrow's oppressors. That's what the city the system perpetuates. And you have a never-ending cycle of that. But I don't want to go too far in, because I know we got some callers. I want to definitely let them sound off on what their overall take in how they see it. So, Scotty, whoever you want to grab up on the board, bring them up. Uh-oh.
They can just follow the normal protocol.
Okay. Okay, cool. Okay, I thought you were. Okay, let's go to some of the callers that are there. If there's a caller there, just... yeah, go ahead. Dick, go ahead.
Hey, Dave. How you doing, Scotty? Everybody that's listening.
What's up,
right? This is Jerry. I guess I'm kind of in the middle of both of you. Because I believe that we need to teach our children how to be political. Although we do need to divest from the system while the system is still active. You have to teach these children at a young age how to maneuver through it. And just separating from the politics hasn't worked thus far. The people who have participated in those politics are the people who made the strides that we get to enjoy today. Although that it's nowhere close to being equality or nothing, but them participating in those politics is why we enjoy the small few little freedoms that we do have. I go back and forth with a couple of my brothers on this too. I understand that we do need to divest, but until this is done and over with, if some of us don't participate, at least some of us, then we steadily on the downward spiral.
Well said, Jerry, and we really, really appreciate you know, your point of view, because I know that there's many that have, their view of things. And I'm not saying that mine is correct or Scotty's is correct or yours is correct. But I respect everyone's, because it's very, very important that we do. And one of the things that always has helped me is that if you want to change a problem, you can't use the same consciousness that created it. You have to think anew. And it was Albert Einstein that said that. And that, in so many ways, that resonates with me, but it resonates in a different way with different people. But I think that there needs to be a complete newness because this is a very savvy, very, very savvy program that's been around much longer than you and I and everyone that's listening on this show. So great, great point, Jerry. Was that what you wanted to express? Did you...
Yes, but you know, every time you speak, you add a you add a new thought. It was interesting that you say, you know, the Einstein quote. As far as, I mean, I guess it's the same as giving the definition of insanity. You know, you keep doing the same thing, you get a different result. But I keep coming back to, it was a lot of us who felt that way, and when we were not participating, that's how all of these laws piled up, is it not?
How all of the laws piled up?
What I mean is once we had the ability to start voting and what have you, when we stopped voting, although like you always say, and it makes so much sense, we most of us who think correctly, well, I ain't gonna say think correctly, but most of us notice that if you don't, your vote is a vote against whatever you, if you don't vote, your vote is against whatever you wanted to happen. So when we don't go out there, and enough of us, like I said, not everybody, but it have to be some of us that's participating in this system in order to, if it's nothing but to gain counterintelligence on what's going on, how this mm-hmm. is happening, what's coming down the pipe. Mm-hmm. And if we completely get away from that, aren't we just cornering out, ain't we cornering ourselves?
No, I mean, my opinion, when is it that we've ever been completely away from it? Never. So we don't really know what it is. What is it that we know that there's a truth of another side? When has the caged animal, when has Shamu ever been in, or Shamu's heirs or descendants the at SeaWorld, when have they ever known any freedom? So only thing that they know is what they've been, the walls of the pools that they've been in. And laws are very significant, because laws are never taken off the books. Never taken off of the book. Whenever a law is written by man, it may not be enforced, but it's never removed. Never, ever, ever removed to resurface. Why? Because this is the overall the system recycling itself and regurgitating itself at the appropriate time. I would say that the great creator never intended us to be political. Intended us to be sovereign and independent, because actually by engaging in policies, in political policies, is not a measure of your self-determination. It is the surrenderance of your party. So, I mean, that's just my opinion. And so I think it's, you know... Yeah, go ahead, Brother Bragg.
Hey, listen, man. I'm gonna jump in on from those Nazis, because see, everything you see is a manifestation of the Nazis, the propaganda that the Nazis did is still in work today. Those Nazis that supposedly Hitler lost the war, but all those people that were in control, all they did was come into America and become the CIA, the FBI, NASA, and all these alphabet soup entities. Now, when you start talking about the vote, we had the full vote. The full vote worked for us. It did work for us. But they came in with forces of arms when the Confederacy lost. Those losing Confederates came into a legally elected Congress, Senate, and ran the melanated people out, because we were the numbers in the South. We had the vote. But once that happened and they ran us out, we have never had a fair vote since. The game is rigged for the bankers. Understand who's running this, the Rothschild. You're in wrong. I say this all the time. People don't hear me. Hear me, though. You're in wrong. Look, they came to your country. They set up Rome all around you. You're a subjugated people. You may not understand what I'm saying. You're under the Geneva Code. You're under the Geneva Convention. You're a subjugated people in your own land. You've been taught that you're somebody else. I'm good, man. Peace, peace. Because I'm ranting. I don't like ranting. Peace.
Greetings, Brother Dave.
The bankers control it.
Hey, I think we got some more callers. Want to keep it moving, because BIB Radio is on tonight at 8 o'clock. They got a guest host. Sister Erica be guest hosting for them tonight. But you do got some calls. I think Mario has a comment he would like to make.
Greetings, family. Yeah, I just wanted to chime in real quick and also add to the conversation that, you know, the Reconstruction period was also named the Reconstruction period because at that particular time, a lot of the melanated people that were participating in the in Congress and government and making decisions were systematically outed, and we've been disenfranchised from the politics that govern the country ever since. So they kicked us out of government for a reason. So I mean, even if voting was a valid process, it still wouldn't count for much, because you know, we are not going to be represented fairly.
Well, let me ask you a question, Brother Mario.
Our representatives to be in there.
Let me ask you a question, Brother Mario. Have you seen this story out of Louisiana with an elected sheriff who was saying, hey, they're passing these laws to let all these nonviolent people out of prison, and we need them for their cheap labor. We use them to change our oil, to cook the food, to wash the cars, and all of that. So that's your sheriff. That's an elected position. So is it your position that voting for a sheriff don't matter?
No, at this particular time, I would say it does not, because we are not involved in politics. I hear your point, and I would agree locally. Yeah, we need to hold the officials that we do elect, we need to hold them accountable. But we are so far removed from the political process that we feel disempowered. We feel like we don't have any control over their actions. Those are the people we can affect, because that sheriff does not have to be voted back into that office ever again. So we can control those offices. We just choose not to. And we also don't enforce how the policing of those votes are tabulated. So we've given over responsibility, and we've given over that power to people who seek to disenfranchise us. So I agree with you that we need to retake that power, because we can effectively make changes on that level. But I was speaking in particular about the Congress and the people of the legislation who are passing the laws, not the people who are supposed to be enforcing and looking after our own interests.
Understood.
Man, great, great, great show. Thank you, Scotty. Thank you all. We're definitely going to have to pick this back up. Hey, listen,
you got another caller, is about to come. Dave, you got okay. One more caller. We still got a little time. This person been hanging on a while, but we got somebody.
Okay.
That's not Brother Bragg. I can't see your phone number. We got another person with a number out of the Chicago area.
That's me. That's a son. Seattle.
Okay. If you haven't spoken, go ahead.
I know we got to go. I just, Brother Bragg's, what he said was right on point, and so was the other cat that was right after him, but we ain't got enough time. There was a couple small little keys that was missing in it. Like, that would be the answer to those problems. But yeah, just when I heard Brother Brad, let me call in. And I heard his voice the other day, because I was in Chicago last weekend, and I forgot that I meant to ask you to reach out to him. But anyways, yeah, I'm just shooting the energy out there because I got on the line late. I didn't even hear the show. I was only on for the past 10 minutes.
So, no, you're good, Hassan.
Okay. Yeah, I was just saying peace. That was all. And I hope once listening to Brother Brad, because he actually was breaking it down super fast in that little Smitty Randy window. He actually said a whole lot in 30 seconds.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He definitely did.
Yeah, man. So, I was just on the line. Like I said, I missed the show, so I was just shooting my energy after letting it out here.
Man, we appreciate it. Okay. All right, everyone. Get ready to get out of here, brother. Just want to thank you all. We'll pick this back up again because it's – and let me just say something I think that's so important. I think that our overall collective prudence and how we resonate with each other should be established by us, not by inheriting an establishment that has never been for us. So it's never goodbye. As always, we'll see you later. And before you ask for a fortune, make sure to give one away. Brother Braggs, go ahead and chime us out of here. Much love, much respect. B.I.B.'s coming on right after the Tando Radio Show. Yes, sir. Go ahead, Brother Bragg.
All righty. Peace, peace.
Peace, peace.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing
cake. Gaddafi didn't give up. In months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. It's an idea that would shift the economic balance of the world. Countries' wealth would depend on how much gold they have, not how many dollars they trade. And Libya has 144 tons of